Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place. The following is a paid program, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent the opinions of the management of this station or Hamel Broadcasting. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Happy Hour. It's Jonna Spilbor. It is Carol Pesci. It is this guy that they let tang along, as I've mentioned before. And we've got a really cool guest for you today. Now, one, I guarantee you she's going to have a really cool accent because she's from New Zealand yes. and stuff. But also she's got like, what was it, Jonna, Carol? We were just
26 books.
Like 300 books? Oh, just 26. Okay,
just 26.
26. Okay. 2.6 million. Yeah. So this is a little bit different type of guest that we're having today, but I think you're going to find her as fascinating as I am finding her already. And not just because she's from New Zealand and she has a wonderful accent. I know that because I'm listening to one of her 2.6 million books. But our guest today is a woman named Fiona Ferris, and she has created, like, her brand is actually called How to Be Chic, and her website is howtobechic.com. And she has created a How to Be Chic at book for nearly everything that you could possibly want to enhance your life. But today we're going to focus on her latest book. It's called The Autumn Reset, a seasonal guide to cozy living, calm focus, and inner renewal. And I think you're really going to enjoy it. And her, like I said, I'm listening to one of her books right now, and she has she could say anything with that New Zealand accent, and it would be, you know, be like, oh, and I had to have a leg amputated, but it would sound just very
so lovely. Yeah. Like
exactly.
Harry John Bishop. Remember when he was on, and we're like, oh, can you just keep talking?
Oh, yeah. That was my mother. Yes. My mother, you know, when we would get prank phone calls about Frankenberry and the name, people would just call and hang up, and they'd giggle, and my dad would come home. Now, my mother knew a lot of very, very English turns of phrase that were very colorful.
Oh, wait, can you say one? Can you say one?
Oh, like, no, I mean, like her two go-tos were Bloody Hell Joseph and this name. And the other one was Hell's Bells. Hell's Bells was probably her favorite. But believe me, when my mother dropped some real curses, it was cool. So my mother drops an F-bomb or two, you're saying really? Frankenberry's got a cool mom.
Now, wait a minute. Hell's Bells actually is a term of art, not just a song.
Oh, it's
an, like, expression.
Yeah, yeah, it's just an expression. It's like, oh, Hell's Bells. Like, you know, if I said something to you, Jonna, that I normally say on a regular basis that just annoys the crap out of you, you would just say, oh, Hell's Bells, Frankenberry, enough.
Oh, something, I didn't know that.
Yeah, something to that effect.
She's writing that down, Frankenberry. She is.
I know she is. Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to use it every chance I get. Hell's Bells.
Now, this one isn't an English one, but the two of you might want to use it every now and then because I know how much you do like to curse. But in case you want to hold yourself, in case you want to hold yourselves back, I did go to college with a young lady who was very, not prim and proper, but she was from a household that did not curse. So
wow.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about
they
it.
They have so, those?
I know. There are some households like that. A lot of them are out in Utah and stuff, but then again, they've all got like three wives. But no, this girl would just look at you, you know, she'd hear you curse, and then she'd go, oh, Steven, you just go ahead and eat a box of rocks. That was as far as she would go to like drop in an F-bomb. She'd go, oh, box of rocks.
That's so far from an F-bomb.
I know it is, but for her, that was big.
I used to have a boss who would curse a lot, and I used to call it blurting. I'm like, you blurt stuff out without thinking about it, so we we created a blurt jar, and every time he cursed or blurted out, he had to put money in it, and he was good. He did. And then periodically we'd go out to lunch with him when it accumulated.
Hey, how look, much money would have to go in?
I was going
to
say, if the dude's buying lunch for more than one or two people, that's a lot of blurting.
And then sometimes he was like really in a mood, and he'd come in the morning, he would just like drop a 20 in it and walk out like it's going to be a day. He was great.
Just being proactive, people.
Yeah.
Like, but speaking of that, not to get completely crazy on this topic, don't you think we are in an age now where we should be allowed to curse on, say, terrestrial radio? Like, don't you think we've evolved? It's no, the seven words that you can't say on radio. Do you think they're obsolete at this point? And I'm actually being serious.
I don't know. I mean, I still to this day. I mean, not that I don't like a comedian who can curse well. You know, I mean, there are some who do it very well. But there are others who I've always said to myself, like Brian Regan, for instance. The dude's been doing stand up for like 35 years, and he doesn't do anything else. Like he's never gone into films. There's a couple of guys who have never, you know, have been like that their whole careers. Like, you know, the show NCIS, the one actor on it, I have never seen him in another show ever. He's never done anything else except his one thing. So, but Brian Regan doesn't curse, and he is one of the funniest guys I have ever heard in my entire life. And I appreciate that ability, because that takes an extra it takes an extra level of talent to not drop to the ease of wanting to just turn to an F-bomb or an S, you know, whatever mm-hmm. word it happens to be. So,
did Seinfeld curse? I don't know if he cursed.
No, I don't think he did. No.
Does. He's still doing stand-up.
Yeah, that's true. I saw him not that long ago, within the last 2 years. Yeah, but I like a swear word.
Oh, you guys mm-hmm. know my favorite one, so I understand that as well, but.
We know your favorite curse word?
Of course you do.
Mm-hmm. Wait, hold on, Carol. Carol, did I forget what Frankenberry's favorite curse word is? Do you remember?
I did.
You did. You forgot.
Is this something you can say on radio, Frankenberry?
Well, it rhymes at the end with trucker.
Oh, of course.
You know, it's
yeah. You do
course.
Say that a lot.
And you combine it with another word.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I do say. See, right now, I just rang that bell, didn't I? Oh, hell's bell, Stephen. Yes, I understand which one you're talking about. Yes,
I do appreciate that. I like that one myself. And sometimes, can I just tell you another thing? I know we have to be very careful on the air, but there's another one that's similar, but it doesn't have a precursor. And I enjoy it more when you take the only vowel that's in the word and you elongate it, you know, like you just, you like drag it out, like, I like that. That like, it feels good when you're saying
like
it.
Like Roy Kent on Ted Lasso. I don't know if either of you have watched the Ted Lasso.
Darn it, no.
Yes, I have watched Ted Lasso, yes.
Hysterical Roy Kent, yeah, he does that.
Because that's a stress relief right there when you do it. Yeah, no. That's what I think.
So we just filled up most of our first segment talking about cursing.
Yeah, we did.
Which is cool, without cursing. How about us?
Yeah, go us.
And it wasn't easy. You know what I wanted to talk about today just a little bit? And I don't have any complaints, so we're going to be a little...
What?
I know. Well, I mean, I have a million, but none that I feel like complaining about today.
So is this the part of the show where, as the producer, I put in the audience gasping?
Yeah.
You know, where they suddenly go.
Yeah. And then after you do that, Carol texts my mother and say, has Jonna been abducted by aliens? Because we're on air right now and she has nothing to complain about.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would be. But you know, this is
and
what...
And she would reply, she was brought here by aliens.
I just got abducted by humans.
That's right. I was a good girl. I didn't do those things. She was brought here by aliens.
So I was on the topic of Halloween for a couple of reasons. First, this show will air right before Halloween. So the show that airs, our next show will happen after Halloween. And as usual, I am going to, my cousin throws a party every year. And I have decided to be something that is in my nature to be a double entendre.
Yes.
I was going to say, yes, you've done that for many years.
For many
Hot
years.
Chocolate, fine print.
Yeah. And you remember. Yeah.
Freudian slip, yes.
But this one requires me to be very interactive. Like, in other words, my other costumes in the double entendre realm were just visual. But for this costume, I have to actually do stuff.
And well, you have to do some acting?
Are you a stand-up comic?
No, I was a stand-up comic, so when I did that, I did a little stand-up comedy show. This is going to be a little more obscure, and I'm afraid that nobody's going to get it.
Yeah, well, they all know you. It's your cousin's house.
Right. Well, first off, that should be your last concern. As long as you think it's funny and you're able to pull it off, that's their own fault that they can't figure it out.
All right. Well, can I?
What is it?
Well, can I explain aspects of the costume and see if you guys can figure it out based on my description?
Sure.
All right. So I'll give you one hint. The costume is two words, and the phrase is a legal term of art. I'll give you that hint. And then here are the things that I am bringing with me.
Legal term of art?
It's a legal term of art. So like in the legal, this the thing that I'm going to be is something that you would hear in a legal case from time to time, depending on.
You mean just a legal term of a phrase or
it's
something?
You
said art. I thought it was like a legal term referring to works of art.
No, that's what I mean, thought.
Like, okay, like I thought Carol and I were on page there. Thought.
Just a term of art. So in other words, like res ipsa loquitur is a legal term of art. So kind of what I'm going to be is a legal phrase.
Okay.
Like a legal term of art. But here's what I'm bringing with me, okay? I am bringing with me a small bag of plastic roaches that I am going to sprinkle throughout the party. I'm also going to bring with me a small bag of plastic poop.
Thank you, Mary. She said it. She said the word.
I know. How about that?
And I'm going to put that strategically in some places. I'm also bringing a harmonica.
Oh my God.
I am bringing a small bullhorn, and I am bringing, you know, those things that they look like, let's say, like a Pringles can of potato chips. When you open it up, a snake pops out.
Yeah.
I'm bringing one of those.
Like a Jack in the Box?
Like that. And I'm bringing a squirting flower, you know, like a little flower on my dress that I can squirt people in the face with water. And I'm bringing a buzzer. So like if I go to shake your hand, you're going to get shocked. And I think
let me ask you something.
Mostly. Yes.
Is this a term Frankenberry and I are familiar with as non-lawyer people?
Right.
So
exactly.
I do think like if I end up telling you what it is, you're going to go, oh, yeah, I've heard of that. You're going to say, I've heard of that. But it's probably not one that you hear commonly. Like, you don't hear it on Law and Order, really. Like, it's not an overly common one. But I think you.
Roaches, poop, mm-hmm. buzzer, mm-hmm.
And then a bunch,
spraying
then a bunch
people
of,
with water.
Yeah, and a bunch of bad, like, stand up comedy clown stuff. Something maybe with clowns.
A harmonica.
The harmonica.
I'm going to randomly play a bullhorn that I might randomly use to enhance my voice. And okay, so that's that. And I'm going to be dressed in a gown with a very voluminous wig. I'm wearing a lot of jewelry. I'm going to be made up to the max so that I look as pretty as possible. And that's the other side of this.
All right. So there's a legal term that has Tammy Faye Baker playing a clown.
No, but you're not that far off.
Oh, well, there you go, Carol.
I'm lost. I got nothing.
You got nothing?
I'm not finding the common thread there.
So, all right. So let me give you another hint. If I were to attend a party that you were at, for example, wouldn't you find it rather annoying if I were placing a plastic roach on your dish Or wouldn't you find it annoying if I just randomly played the harmonica badly in the middle of a conversation? And wouldn't you find it annoying if I offered you a chip and you got hit in the face with a snake? Wouldn't that be a nuisance?
Oh.
I was going to, okay, so none of these are necessarily connected. They're just you being a pain in the butt.
Yes.
You being annoying.
A nuisance.
So you could say public nuisance.
Close. Very close.
Because you're in public, but that doesn't explain necessarily the Tammy Faye Baker aspect of this costume.
Mm-hmm. Now, so move away from Tammy Faye Baker, even though that is what I described. And just think more in terms of, you know, I'm going there to be pretty.
Okay.
Pretty. The whole ensemble is designed to be pretty.
And to be noticed.
And to be noticed.
Okay.
And to be noticed. Remember, double entendre, legal term. I'm setting out to be the interactive part as I'm going to be a nuisance.
Recurring nuisance?
No.
Now I'm Googling.
Oh, now. If you're Googling, you're going to get it.
Yes, it's permanent.
What is that?
Permanent nuisance.
No.
Continuing nuisance.
No.
Recurring nuisance, temporary nuisance. Public or common nuisance.
No.
And private nuisance.
You need you're close, but you're not landing on it.
All right.
You know what? We can
give it up.
No, I'll give it up after our guest. I'll give it up.
All right. All right. We'll discuss it more in segment three, and we'll just remember never to take Carol, you know, with us to a bar for a trivia night, because she'll be the one saying, "Hey, honey, block me. Don't let them see what I'm doing."
Are you guys doing anything for Halloween? Are you dressing up?
No.
Those days are over?
No, I'm just kidding. I mean, look, if there are kids in the neighborhood, I'll make sure I'm home so there's candy for them. But other than that,
Yeah.
So we're going to go to the guest. We'll do a reset. And maybe before it's winter, you'll give us the answer.
Oh, my God. Oh, Frankenberry.
Sometimes it's painful, but it's okay. We take it because we love each other.
I think that was really good considering what you were giving me.
Even when it's painful, when it comes from her, it's painfully good.
Okay, good point.
There you go.
That Sigu was, again, to remind everybody that when we do come back from the break, we are talking to New Zealander and author extraordinaire Fiona Ferris, who has written, we think at last count, 26 books, but her most recent one is called The Autumn Reset. We think that's appropriate since we are in the throes of autumn. And the subtitle, which has enough words to annoy Frankenberry, is A Seasonal Guide to Cozy Living, Calm Focus, and Inner Renewal. So we'll be chatting with How to Be Chic creator Fiona Ferris when we come back.
All right. That's what we've got in store, which should be enough for all of you to come back and join us. If not, we will just have to have a discussion then, won't we?
I'll be hanging out with Google until we come back.
Here you go. It's John, it's Carol, it's this dude. We'll be back.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back again to Happy Hour. Jonna Spilborg, Carol Pesci, this guy. Yeah, I know. My apologies. But hey, look, we got a really cool guest, okay? So just bear with it for a second. All right, I'm just doing my job. Anyway, it's time now to get to our guest for the day, who just before we started recording, Jonna had mentioned that is a real trooper, because it's 6:30 in the morning for her in New Zealand. So she agreed to come on and talk with us at 6:30 in the morning. Now, that's probably because she doesn't know us. So you'll probably start to feel the regret build up a little bit in her voice throughout this.
Stop it,
Frankenberry. Go ahead. She's got like 300 books. Talk about
it. That's never going to happen, right? She's an early bird like us. So, okay, without further ado, our guest today, I'm already feeling like cozy and that I should have a cup of tea in my hand. But we are talking to Fiona Ferris, who before the break we mentioned she's the author of 2.6 million books. And the one we're going to be talking about today is her latest called The Autumn Reset. But let me tell you a little bit about her. When you have 2.6 million books, you can't help but be a best-selling author who loves writing books all about living a fabulous life without spending a lot of money. She is a fan of cultivating a luxurious mindset and of making everyday life as enjoyable as possible. Who doesn't want that? Mm. Fiona lives in the sunny wine region. Now she's our new BFF of Hawke's Bay, New Zealand, with her husband and their adored rescue pets, where she lives a simple, peaceful, happy homebody life while writing her 25 plus books for her lovely global readership. Fiona Ferris, welcome to Happy Hour.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I'm so thrilled to be here with you and your lovely audience.
We are so happy to have you. And I got to tell you, so this is so interesting to me because when I found you because of your latest book called The Autumn Reset, subtitled A Seasonal Guide to Cozy Living, Calm Focus, and Inner Renewal. And when I dug a little deeper, Fiona, I did not realize that you have a magnificent like series all about how to be chic, because that's your brand. The howtobechic.com is what you started. And I'm dying to know, if you don't mind, how did that whole concept come about?
It came a little bit tongue in cheek, actually, because I've always enjoyed the thought of being chic. I mean, who doesn't?
Right.
Maybe. Yeah. So, but I really like the, you know, the classic, the red lipstick, the pearls, the beret, all that kind of stuff that you might think of when you think someone is chic. But for me, it's a simpler thing. And I've sort of come to see that it's living life in your own style, in your own chic way. And for me, mine is a really, as you read in my bio, it's a really simple and peaceful life. And, but I make that chic. And I think we all can do that in our lives. Just make it as chic as it can be, just in our style and in our budget as well, because I'm not into spending big. I think if you spend a lot, you have to earn a lot, and that's stressful. And I just think if you have this life that suits you, life is better.
And it's such a simple but true concept. And I just want to tell our audience, like, I love the ideas that you came up with and how to be chic. Like, I'm just going to give a couple of, you have so many books, over two dozen books, but you have luxurious weight loss, how to be elegantly chic on a budget, 100 ways to be that girl. I love that. 100 ways to declutter your home. I am right now reading, I want to say, let me just pull it up. It's the one on success, which is also another, hang on, I just was listening to it. Hang on, I'm going to tell you what it is right now. Not that you don't already know, because it's your book. 100 ways to be a chic success and create your dream life. And I'm absolutely loving it. Where do you come up with the ideas though, Fiona? I mean, I get the whole simple life thing, and I saw like where you live, like your homestead looks beautiful and calm and pristine. How do you come up with these ideas, each individual idea?
It's just the fun that I have in my mind. It just, it's how I like to live and how I like to dream about and think about things. And I love the idea of being a chic success because I feel like I am ambitious, but in a soft way. Like I don't want to, I'm not this hard-nosed salesperson. I just want to live a really good life, and I really want to share that enthusiasm to other people. And that's, I guess that's what being a chic success is. It's being a success on your terms. It's, I'm always fascinated by the way, like, of personal style. And, but it's not just how you dress, it's how you live your life. Like, it's personal style in all aspects to your life, like how you talk to people, how you keep your home, how you keep your car. And I guess it all just goes out from there, that you would just touch each area of your life and be successful in all areas, but in a really soft, low-key way.
You know, I like it. That's a, that is sort of a different approach than, you know, some of the other people in this space, in like the, in the motivational space. And one of the things that attracted me to your book, The Autumn Reset, is that, and I don't even know if it's related to the season, but I have been finding myself lately wanting to take, I don't care whether it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes. I don't have the luxury of taking like a whole day, maybe a half a day, and just doing absolutely nothing, like nothing, not thinking about the next thing that has to be done, not worrying about anything, not vacuuming the floor, nothing. And I'm finding that if you can do that without feeling guilty, it is refreshing, for lack of a better word. Do you know what I mean?
I couldn't agree more. My happiest weekend is when I have no plans whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to be anywhere. Like, even if it's a fun thing, like I'm being taken out for dinner, it really stresses me. And I just like having this big open space in front of me. And that's probably why I get up early. I like to get things done when I get up. I write really early in the morning. I have my cup of tea and my bed's already made. Like my bed was made before I even usually get up on a normal day this morning, because then I just have this like freedom in front of me. I don't like things hanging over me. And I agree, like just having the opportunity to do nothing is just thrilling.
This is Carol. I have a question for you as a sister author.
Yes.
How long ago did you write your first book? Did you know at the time that this was going to take on the kind of life that it has with 20 something more coming later?
I love that.
It was a big step to write my first book. And my first book was 30 Chic Days, and it was 30 small chic things you could do, one a day for a month, and to just build on that to create a chic life. And it took me so long to get that book out, years. Because I'd write a chapter, I'd think, oh, this is my book, this is what I'm going to do. And then I'd print it out and I'd think, this is really good. And I'd say, oh no. And then I'd put it into a drawer.
Mm-hmm.
And so often I'd come across this bundle of papers and I'd bring it out and went, this is really good. Why are you doing
this? Did I write this?
I'd write a couple of chapters and then I'd have this crisis of confidence again, and then I'd put it back in the drawer. And eventually, that stop-start method, I finished a book. And so I thought, well, what's the worst that can happen? I can put it on Amazon and no one can buy it. Like, maybe they can give me a one-star review. There's not much worse that can happen than that. So I put it out there. And in the first month, it was really, really popular, and it still continues to sell. That was published in mid-2016, but I was dabbling around doing a few little books of blog posts just to test how it worked on Amazon in 2015, so it's been 10 years. But it's still selling nine and a bit years later, along with all my other books. So, yeah, I'm just so glad I started, because it really has taken on a life of its own. And my first books were normal length books, you know, like maybe 300 pages. And that's why they took me so long to write. And then you have to edit them and proofread them and get other people to help as well. And it just takes so long. And I really got bogged down in them. And I had all these ideas for really niche topics that wouldn't fill a whole book. And I just really wanted to explore all these different little ideas I had. And I also saw that people really love short books, and I do too.
Mm-hmm.
Love a book that might be like 100 pages long, maybe like 100 to 200 pages long, because I can get it, I can read it, I can feel like I've achieved something when I've finished reading a book that I've bought on Kindle. And so I just gave myself permission to explore that as well. And now I really am hooked on these short little books that are still long enough, like 100 to 120 pages is still long enough to explore a topic, but you can really just explore one topic, which I really like, rather than have to, because often books, they get a bit boring and I don't finish them because they just padded out to fill up the pages.
Yes.
And they went into so much detail that often I'll listen to them on audiobooks sped up a little bit so that I don't stop.
Jana does the same thing. Fiona.
I do.
It's a good tip.
But I think the way you've done this with this series, first of all, they're all, I completely understand why they're still selling, because they're all rather timeless topics, number one.
So
from a business perspective, to kind of break this down into bite-sized books, for lack of a better word, I think is absolutely genius. And I got to agree with you, and Carol probably would too. Not that I don't have the attention span for the bigger, longer books, but I love getting my information in nuggets and then moving on to the next piece of information. And I think you can also sell more that way. But it just makes total sense. We live in such a busy world that when we squeeze in the time to reset or read a book or have a few minutes to ourselves, we don't have a whole lot of time to read a full length always.
It's true. It's a real TikTok world with all these short form videos and things are much shorter. And I just know for myself, when I'm reading a book on Kindle and I've been reading it for, you know, a few days or a week, and I look at, I always have the percentage at the bottom of how far you are through the book.
Me too. Like,
we're the same. And so when I've been reading it for ages and I look down and it says 4%, I get really, I think, oh man, how much more of the book is there to go? I'm enjoying it. So if I can look down and see that I'm at 45 or 62%, I'm like, yeah, I can do this. I can finish this book as a reader. Yeah.
So Fiona, I love your format. I agree with everything that you're saying. Let's take a moment to talk specifically about the autumn reset. Okay. So why did you want to write this book for people? What can people get out of the autumn reset?
Well, I think autumn is such a beautiful time of the year. And I just wanted a chance to make this sort of 3-month container of loveliness, but also of getting things done as well. So there's always those 90-day plans and that kind of thing. And I thought, I really want to have a goal aspect to it too, because I really love setting soft goals for myself and little sort of challenges and motivations, because I think sprints is the way a lot of us work well, rather than having this big 1-year-long goal of a New Year's resolution where you sort of fizzle out because it's such a long period of time. But thinking, what can I achieve in the next 90 days? Like, could I write half a book or even the whole book if it's a short one? Could I get the manuscript drafted? Or could I start a fitness plan that I'll sort of lock in as habit after 90 days? So there's that aspect to it. But there's also the aspect of enjoying the season. And I've already written a book about how to be chic in the summer and how to be chic in the winter. And so I thought, okay, readers are asking me for an autumn book and I really want to write a spring book as well. Why not complete the set? And I think in New Zealand, our autumn doesn't lead into a fun thing like Christmas. Our autumn leads into a big cold blob in the middle of the year called winter. And there's nothing to look forward to. And I always used to be so envious of the Northern Hemisphere. They just had this glorious time. And I was just here in New Zealand going, oh, why wasn't I born somewhere else? But I've decided to take on autumn for my own autumn at the beginning of the year. And I'm moving into a fall state of mind, because we don't really call it fall here, but you guys do. And so I sort of got into the swing of it and really enjoyed I did it for the first time last year. I had fall and spring at the same time, like while it was warming up and heading into Christmas, because it always feels Christmassy when the weather's heating up for us, because that's all we've ever known.
So weird. But,
yeah, I know. So strange. But I've got friends in the US. And so I was like, I'm going to join in with you guys. I'm just going to be enjoying fall as well. And they're going, oh, that's fantastic. Now we can talk about it a lot because we really love it too. And I just, but even so, I think there are a few people that do have that festive loveliness in the Northern Hemisphere. There are still people that really dread autumn and going into winter. So as with my other seasonal books, it's about picking out what you love most about the season and doing more of those things and finding new ideas. I always love gathering ideas and sharing them with people. And that's what I've done in this book, about making it a fabulous autumn season. And you can pick up the book each year. That's what readers tell me they do with the seasonal books. And my Christmas book is that they get that book out. That's like a tradition. You grab the Christmas book out and, you know, reinvent your Christmas. Or maybe that sounds a bit much, reinventing it, but just re-enjoying it, like remembering what you love about it, remembering the road bumps that sort of trip you up as well, because I do that. I sort of only go into season thinking of all the great things and I forget there are ways to smooth things over to make it better.
I'm finding a lot of your books seem to center around self-care without really saying that that's what they center around. And do you think it would be like, you know, I noticed, so some of the things that you talk about in the autumn reset is, you know, how to curate your fall wardrobe and how to cozy up in your home and how to edit your own life. Do you think like this book, because it's one of your seasonal books, is a good idea if you're just sitting around, you're feeling a little frustrated and maybe you're feeling a little overwhelmed from whatever, like we do in life, right? Work, other obligations, sit down, read the book, and then sort of chart out how you can take better care of yourself and start meeting your goals and doing that. It's something that you would do ahead of those things. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Because it's about mindset. Like you can start out thinking, oh, I'm a bit frustrated, down in the dumps. I don't know what to do. And so you're not really motivated to do anything. Right. That's what I find. But when I read something that really just adds a sparkle or lights me up, it becomes effortless to do those things, to care for yourself better and just make yourself feel better. And that way you're a nicer person. I'm much nicer to my husband when I, you know, I'm happier in myself. He could tell you that. So it's really self-care. It's got that self in it that people think, oh, that's selfish. You know, you're spending all that time in the bathroom putting lotion on your legs and, you know, that time could be better spent elsewhere. But you're actually, when you do all those little things for yourself, you're actually better for other people as well. So it's the opposite of selfish, in my opinion.
You just said something that I think is the key, at least what I'm getting out of the autumn reset so far, is little. You said the word little. And I think sometimes when we feel our lives feel less than inspired or overwhelmed, or we're feeling down or frustrated, that we feel like there needs to be a massive change in our life for us to feel better. And I'm getting this from your book, is you're giving us so many ideas of, okay, here's little things you can do to settle down, be more present in the season, to enjoy your life a little more. And they don't require a lot of money or big change, right?
That's very true. Very astute to pull it out of that book. I hadn't really thought of it that way. But yes, small things are less expensive, or free often, and they are easy to slip into your day without taking up too much time. I am always a fan of the massive makeover, the big reveal, the transformation, but there's so much that goes into that, and it really can burn you out if that's the sort of thing you're chasing. So I just like to do little things every day that make me feel good, and that sort of adds up to a lovely life when I do things like that. Like I always light a scented candle. I light it in the hall, and then it sort of goes throughout the house. Like I don't really want it on my desk right under my nose. I always put soft music on. So those two things, I turn the lamps on when I get up, and that sort of sets me up for my day. And I've got my cup of tea and start my writing. And those are all sort of little nice things. Like I'm not making things too hard for myself. And I think that's where many of us, we think the only way we can change or improve is to make these big proclamations, a public declaration of what we're going to do. And I'm going to completely change myself. I'll be unrecognizable in 90 days. And it's not. I was thinking back about that. Like, I'm still the same person and I still look the same. But over the years, you know, I've just refined how I dress. But really, I'm still the same person. So, and I don't really want to be unrecognizable. I know that's a big buzzword at the moment, but I've seen on lots of YouTube videos. But I just, maybe for other people, but for me, and I think a lot of people like me, it's just too much pressure and too much effort. And we want things to be simple and easy, and just making those little changes and adding small things into our day that makes life better, that's how we can sort of achieve that.
I think we really underestimate the power of taking baby steps. And you kind of mentioned that too in the book that I'm listening to, 100 Ways to Be a Chic Success and Create Your Dream Life. You do mention that, you know, the whole adage about eat an elephant one bite at a time. That is the way, though. That really keeps you from feeling overwhelmed. And each little step toward your goal is a step toward your goal. And if you do, because the corollary is, or the opposite of that is, if you feel overwhelmed, you're not going to do anything, right? So
yep.
One little baby step at a time is really helpful. And I know that we have to wrap up here soon, but I'm actually on your website. And again, I love the name, the How to Be Chic, because You have a link there to all to Amazon where people can buy all of your books. Do you do other things, Fiona? Like, can we find you on a podcast? Do you have a YouTube channel, or is the best way to learn about you and receive the benefit is to go buy your books?
I think so. I just do a few. I like to keep life simple, so I don't have a podcast, even though I keep thinking about starting one. I think, oh, am I just adding, you know, more to my plate? I just like to keep things simple, and that way I can put all of my energy into writing my books. And I just think they're an inexpensive way to get a little different perspective and a few new ideas. My short books are less expensive than my longer books because I like to be fair. I always like value in things for myself, so I want to offer value to my readers. Like for $5, you can sort of get a real light bulb moment or some ideas to shift your mindset. So I'm on Instagram and Facebook. But apart from that, really, in my blog, which is really just, I don't know, behind the scenes of how I live my life and how I write my books. That's what I like to offer in my social media and my blog. But apart from that, it's all in my books.
And it is really calming. Your whole website is calming. I love even the sound of your voice is calming. So we have to wrap up, but we have been talking with a very prolific author, Fiona Ferris, who joins us all the way from New Zealand. We almost got her on with us at 4:30 in the morning, her time. I decided to not be that heartless.
You don't want to inconvenience us lazy Americans now, do you?
Her latest book in a wonderful series on how to be chic is called The Autumn Reset, A Seasonal Guide to Cozy Living, Calm Focus, and Inner Renewal. Guys, this is a very, it's an easy read, right? It's about simplicity. Keep it simple. And you can find all of her books on Amazon. You could also check out her blog at howtobechic.com. Fiona Ferris, it has been a pleasure meeting you and talking with you this morning.
Thank you, Fiona.
Thank you both. It's been wonderful. I've so enjoyed spending some time with you.
Yes, thank you very much, Fiona. And I just want to let you know, by the way, the whole baby step thing, I did have a little bit of a light bulb moment, though. I mean, I've been taking baby steps for like 61 years now, so I'm good at that. But the light bulb moment was when you guys mentioned there's supposed to be a goal at the end.
Yeah, imagine that.
What the hell is that all about?
Frankenberry, stop walking in circles.
Fiona, thank you so very much for joining us. And for John Spilborg, Carol Pesci, we're not done quite yet. Those two and this guy will be right back. Segment number three is still to come, so please stick around.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
All right, and welcome back one more time here to Happy Hour. It's Jonna Spilborg. It's Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Frankenberry.
See, I thought I could change it up a little bit there, too. I never do that.
You did.
Yeah, because I'm kind of boring. I understand that. But Fiona Ferris, thank you very much for joining us today. That was a very cool interview.
Oh, lovely. I could listen to her talk all day.
I can't tell you how much I love this concept of little bite-sized ideas reduced to a book. That, I mean, that's right up my alley in terms of attention deficit disorder. And I mean that in the nicest, in the most wonderful way.
What's right up my alley is to not like this goal driven, how to make it happen, how to do it, like so structured, driven. She's more decide how you want to feel in your life and let's dial it back to make sure your life gives you that. And here's one that happens to do with autumn and how you can simplify and enjoy your life more. I love it so much.
Yeah, it's a very interesting concept, right? A little bit of a departure from, like you said, the whole let's go climb Mount Kilimanjaro.
Rah, rah, rah. Yeah. So, yeah, she was lovely. Okay, so we cannot leave this show yet today until you tell us about your Halloween costume.
Right. No, we got
we did not, we got nothing. But we did
get the nuisance concept, and we did get the fact that you're just being annoying. But there's something about a pretty nuisance that is your
public
costume.
No, you said public, Randy, didn't you, Frankenberry?
Yes, and that was a no.
He said public, and I said no. So what the piece that you guys are missing is the pretty part. I'm just going to send you the answer. And then you're going to go, oh, my God, why didn't I think of that?
Okay, and then you can let the audience know on our first show back whenever it is after Halloween.
Yes, after Halloween, because we will air 2 days after Halloween, but a week after the Halloween party.
I would not know this term.
You would not know it?
Nope.
Oh, so that means, you know what that means? Nobody at the party is going to know it either, right? Right.
Well, I'm looking at it right now, and let's see. Well, I mean, I guess.
Well, tell our audience what it is, because that's rude.
You sure? You don't want me to wait until after the.
Oh, well, no. I mean, we did kind of say what it was, you know, at least when I just said a pretty nuisance. That's almost it. I just didn't know there's an actual phrase called attractive nuisance.
To have a conversation surrounded around a topic with other people listening and not letting them in on it isn't cool. So.
All right. So he just said it. So I'm going as an attractive nuisance. So the attractive, which is a legal concept, right? And I'll tell you how, I'll give you the legal definition.
Okay.
It's a dangerous but alluring condition on someone's property. So like usually swimming pools would be considered an attractive nuisance.
Oh.
And when people get hurt, right, there's a whole legal axiom about attractive nuisances and how, you know, property owner needs to be careful of them. But you're right. Nobody at the party is going to get it, but I'm going to have fun annoying people.
Of course. Definitely so. Definitely. I think actually you should commission somebody to make a statue of yourself and throw it out on your front lawn just to see what happens.
Yeah, right, Frank and Barry.
Yeah, just to see what the neighbors do.
Oh, you know, I think they'll leave it alone. I don't think they'll throw eggs at it or deface it in any way, shape, or form.
No, they would not do that at all.
Yeah, no, why would they do that?
They already love you.
You know, one last thing before we go. I was thinking about Halloween now and Halloween when we were kids. Mm-hmm. Do you guys remember, like, one of the sickest things that our parents ever let us do? Bobbing for apples. Do you remember bobbing?
People still do that.
Yeah, I'm sure they considering the fact that you're bobbing in other people's spit.
You're bobbing in other people's saliva. And the concept is you've got to stick your face in a vat of apples and water with your hands behind your back. Like, people have drowned doing lesser things. And maybe this is just my family.
Ooh.
But
wait a minute. What? Would a bobbing for apples stand be an attractive nuisance?
It actually would. It actually would. If somebody got hurt on it, it could be. Yeah. But do you guys remember, because maybe it's just me or I'm misremembering. Do you remember sometimes, like, if you were at a party and there was a bobbing for apple event going on, the people in charge would get frustrated when nobody could actually get an apple using just your face and in freezing cold water and other people's saliva. So they would put like toothpicks in them so you could grab the toothpick and make easier with the hope that you would be blind.
Oh, and then you could stab yourself in the eye with that.
Exactly. Yeah, you could blind yourself instead as well to make it even easier to go after the apple.
I'm going to Google if anybody's ever been sued.
And you know what, John? That would make a great double entendre costume, by the way. What?
Bobbing for apples?
You go to a Halloween store of some type. You find a mask of a dude named Bob, some famous guy named Bob.
Bob Ross.
There you go, Bob Ross. You have a bag of apples with you, and when you walk around the party the whole time, bobbing your head and looking at the apples.
Dang. Now I've got to consider that next year against what I was going to do next year was bubble wrap, and I was going to wrap myself in bubbles and sing rap songs. Now I've got a choice.
I like that much better.
Anywho.
All right. Well, listen, Fiona Ferris, thank you so much for joining us today, all the way from New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And for John Spilbore, for Carol Pesci, I am this Frankenberry fella. And we will be back again next week right here. So make sure you join us again then for Happy Hour. Thanks.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with John Spilbore and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 929WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 WBPM.